The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
Paul Skeens is getting the call from the Pirates, and we're going to have a lot of other great Pirates talk. Plus, why are MRIs not necessarily the be-all, end-all? I've got Travis Sochik. We're going to talk about those topics and more coming up on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Jeff Erickson. I'm here with Travis Sochik, the senior baseball writer for The Score, and also the author of Big Data Baseball and the MVP Machine. Travis, thank you so much for joining us today.
Great to be with you.
Let's jump right into the big news. That is, Paul Skeens is getting the call from the Pirates. Everybody that's been stashing him in their fantasy leagues, super excited. Dynasty leagues, keeper leagues, they're beyond excited. And Pirates fans, they now have two aces in their staff.
Yeah, if you were willing to be patient, you're feeling pretty good this morning about having him on your roster. And it's interesting, the Pirates, you know, since the Gerrit Cole, Jameson Taillon, Tyler Glasnow group that came up, you know, almost a decade ago, they really haven't developed much pitching. And now, right, all of a sudden, they have Baseball America's top two ranked pitching prospects, I believe, in their rotation. So, Jared Jones is more of a developmental success story, I suppose. Skeens is more of just winning the tanking lottery. But right, they're still in the rotation. And, yeah, if you're a Pirates fan, you have to feel good about – I mean, imagine a Pirates team that goes into October with these two healthy – and you shrink your rotations and you get more innings from them. That's an exciting prospect, but they're going to have to hit a little bit more to have that on the horizon. But yeah, certainly exciting. I mean, these are two Skeens, you know, arguably the best pitching prospects in Strasburg to the debut. And we've all seen them just mow down minor league opponents. So yeah, it's very exciting prospect for sure.
It is. He is. And it's so funny because I make that, you know, the Strasburg's always the comp, right? I've made it many times before. I've read many comps of that. Dominates in college, has the fast track to the majors. Do you think the Pirates handled him properly, keeping in the minors to start the year here?
I mean, the team was acting rationally and not starting his service time clock so quickly that they would lose that full year of service time. So unfortunately for players, the CBA works against them, and the teams are always, as we know, going to delay them to some degree. As far as like the building up the innings, and I don't think we really know. I mean, you know, JJ Cooper of Baseball America just did some research on showing that all these guys who've had their innings limit, it rarely works out. I mean, look at Yuri Perez, who was handled about as carefully as you could be handled, you know, injured. And then you look at some of the great volume pitchers of all time. You know, they were never, even like a Justin Verlander, I don't think had huge limitations early in his career. So I don't think we know anything about keeping pitchers healthy. The only thing I suspect is, and I've done a little, I wrote a piece recently just looking at how the a pitcher's min versus maximum fastball velocities in a given season, that is shrinking. So as I believe that's, most people believe that's what they're seeing, that most guys are throwing more with more max effort and there's less cruising. I do think, and then in shorter outings, pitchers are more incentivized to just kind of max out. So I do think that is playing a role. And I wonder if that, you know, I don't know if we can put that back in the bottle, but yeah, I don't think we know anything about keeping pitchers healthy. And I do, the debate with Skeens, I think last draft was you had a great group of college hitters and you had Skeens as, you know, a lot of evaluators' best pitching prospect out of college since Strasburg. And, but of course we look at the list of high velocity throwers from last season. And I think they're all hurt. Like if you look at the top down, it's unfortunate, but you look at all these guys, they're all hurt. So do you take on that risk with Skeens if you're the Pirates, or do you take the safer, but perhaps lower ceiling bat? And I think they did the right thing. We'll see how health plays out. But just from the standpoint that if you're working the Pirates front office, you don't have another chance to go get a top of the rotation pitcher. Bob Nutting is not going to pay for one on the free agent market. They're very difficult to trade for. So Skeens is really, unless you have a pop-up prospect, he's your best chance of having an immediate top of the rotation arm. So I think, you know, they made the right choice there. Now, how have they handled him? To, as I'm rambling to get back to your original question, I was frustrated. I just want to see him. And from the day he was drafted, he was one of their top two pitch starting pitching options, I would say. I think the day he was drafted, you could argue, well, if you had to start a playoff game tomorrow, would you start Mitch Keller or Paul Skeens? And I still think you might start Paul Skeens.
And now the answer might be Jared Jones.
Yes. Right. But we'll see. You know, he stays healthy.
Yeah. To your point about pitch counts, limiting pitch counts, limiting outings, Kyle Boddy had a pretty good thread just the other day. And he's, you know, the founder of Driveline. He's consulted with teams before. I think he just hooked up with another team. I forget which team he signed.
Yeah, he's with the Red Sox now.
He's with the Reds, and I loved it when he was with the Reds. And one of his contentions was pitchers know if, okay, you've got an innings or a pitch count limitation, I'm going to max out until then. And so when Hunter Green came back from his TGS, they kind of purposely didn't say, okay, you're going to go with this sort of pitch count, so that he would have to kind of pace himself because he didn't know how long he was going to be able to go. He hasn't gotten hurt this year. Since I don't know if it worked, but like you said, I don't know if there is a way to keep pitchers healthy, especially when there's such an emphasis on velocity and movement and things of that nature. And you know, I was listening to an interview with Brock Stewart on MLB Network Radio, and he goes, I was out of baseball basically, and then I added 5 miles an hour and got me back into baseball. So the injury risk is worth the trade-off. And that's the dilemma that every pitcher and every team faces.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that the correlation between velocity and performance, there's no, that's a real thing. And pitchers are chasing performance. That how do you get paid? To get drafted, first of all, you got to, you know, light up a radar gun. And then to excel at the major league level, generally you need a great fastball. And generally, great fastballs are thrown with above average velocity. And then to, you know, that to that point about, if you know you're having a shorter outing, if you know you have a, it's really interesting, Kyle's point there. And yeah, so do you even, and you wonder if that leads to, of course, more max efforting if you're not, so you wonder if Skeens knows what his innings limit is
know,
this year.
Right.
And you wonder, I think the Pirates are five games out right now, somewhere in that ballpark. You wonder, are they setting themselves up for a Strasburg situation where, of course, the Nationals shut him down in the midst of a pennant race? And who knows if that even did it, you know, did that even help him? Because we all, Strasburg had a very nice career, but he also had a bunch of injuries. So I don't know. And then do you even like Skeens 27 innings at the AAA level? If you're limiting to say is 150, whether he knows it or not, was it worth even letting him throw 27 innings? Was it, would it have, why couldn't he have not been stretched out in the major league bullpen? What was he doing in Bradenton when he showed up there in early February? Like, why was he being built up in April? What was he doing?
Right. So, and does that, and like, and going back to the original point, like you mentioned Strasburg also, and you mentioned Yuri Perez, it didn't work. Shutting him down in the playoff race didn't keep him any healthier. They might as well have tried to have had a better playoff team. They made the playoffs somehow improbably. And then, you know, we won't get into ripping on the Marlins because I think I do it every podcast. So we'll move on from what they didn't do this offseason. they are what they are. One other related Skeens point here. The Pirates are in a rebuild. You know, perpetual rebuild, unfortunately. But, you know, you look at the Astros, you look at the Cubs, you look at the Orioles now. When they did the tear it down to the studs rebuild method, they built back up around hitters. You know, they built this awesome offensive core and then added the pitching on top once they got there. Felt like the Pirates are kind of doing it differently.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think you have to react to the draft pool in front of you too. And there's certainly a bunch of evaluators thought Skeens was the best prospect and much better than the next pitching prospect. So if you just put health concerns to the side, the best player was Skeens. And, you know, it's, I think it goes back to the point of, you know, like the Astros and the Cubs, when they build around college position bats through their tank and rebuild efforts, they had the financial, their front offices had the budget from ownership to go fill in with free, you know, top end free agent pitchers or acquire and extend them. The Pirates don't have that under Bob Nutting. So if you, again, if you want that ace, you're going to have to draft and develop or amateur international signing and develop. And Skeens is ready.
Yeah.
And Skeens is ready made to just fit in a rotation. And since you're probably not going to extend him, you don't even have to worry about his 15-year outlook. You just need to worry about, are we going to get 6+ years out of him?
Right.
So yeah, I think from the Pirates' perspective, it made sense. He's the best player in the class. We need pitching. We've really struggled to develop it outside of really Mitch Keller and Jared Jones are one of their very few success stories in recent years. So
yeah,
I think it makes sense from that perspective. And, you know, just to, and the one thing is just getting back to the max velocity point real quick is, can there be more guys that cruise like a Logan Webb or Tanner Houck this year in Boston? He is not max. He could max effort at 97, but he's not. And I do think there's some throwers who can rely. Not everyone can throw this way. Not everyone's body is built to do this, but
right.
They can rely on movement, capture some of that seam shifted wake benefit, and they don't need to max effort and they can get outs. And I wonder if there could be, even Justin Verlander said recently, you know, earlier in my career, I did cruise at times, and that's why he would in the eighth inning, he famously could go get 98 when he wanted it, but he's another guy whose min-max window has closed over time as this pressure to throw more and more near your max capabilities has become more commonplace. And I do wonder, you know, does Skeens really need to throw 100 miles an hour every pitch? Or is he an example of where, okay, you want that in your back pocket for where you need it in tight spots, but maybe he should cruise at 97. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. I just wonder if that's a way to help these guys.
Yeah, I think everybody thinks about that at some point in time too. But then you have the emphasis on not hitting the third time through the order. So why cruise when you're not even going to be there and all that? Not everybody's built like Justin Verlander, and he still had TGS in his 30s. So, you know, there's all sorts of arguments and counter arguments. It's fascinating, and it's also beguiling because, like you said at the beginning, nobody knows how to keep a pitcher healthy. Nobody does.
No. And the Pirates are rebuilding, but they also have Ke'Bryan Hayes is locked into an extension. Brian Reynolds, you know, hopefully O'Neill Cruz can tighten up his, you know, swing decisions. So they're sort of like, this is as good a collection of talent as, you know, they're going to, I know they have some more help on the way, but they sort of need to win now. And that division isn't, all that intimidating. I guess the Central's a little better this year in some respects, but this is a time for them to win now. So it does make some sense to not delay a Skeens to Super 2 and try to really be cheap in the arbitration aspect of his career. So yeah, the time is really now for Pirates, and hopefully Skeens can stay healthy because, you know, he is a special talent and it would be good for baseball as a whole to have some of these guys stay healthy that have, we've lost, I mean, Strider, the Gerrit Cole missing. It just,
It's been brutal.
Uncle.
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking at the list of Pirates first round draft picks, and you know, lately they've had three out of the last four have been pitchers, but you know, Henry Davis was a first round pick, 1.1. In fact, Nick Gonzalez was a 1.7. It hasn't worked out so far. We haven't seen Tamar Johnson yet. He was a 1.4. But they seem to have problems no matter what they draft, whether it's a pitcher or a hitter, having a whole lot of success. I mean, we all remember the triumphant reign of Travis Swaggerty. You know, it's just, I hate to pick on the player. I mean, it just has not worked for the Pirates.
Yeah, I do. I do think the new regime deserves a little time to see, sure, you know, what can they build as far as a player development infrastructure. And, you know, Jared Jones, maybe he's evidence that this new leadership group can turn things around a little bit.
Right.
But yeah, the history, I don't think you draft a catcher that early unless you're absolutely sure he's a great catcher, which we don't know if Henry Davis is even catcher.
Right.
And you better make sure he's a hitter too.
Absolutely.
You don't know if Henry Davis is a hitter too. So the history of drafting catchers in the top 10 is it's not great. So I think that was an issue. But yeah, the Skeens pick. Let's see if this new Pirate regime can change your fortunes around in draft and development, because they're going to have to get it done there. What we know isn't going to change is they're going to run a bottom quartile payroll, and everything they do well is going to have to come internally, essentially.
Exactly. And Johnson's still, he's still 19. Let's pump the brakes on, you know, making a judgment on him just yet. Bubba Chandler is another pitcher that's in our top 100 prospects. So they have some upside there, but just, when you have these premium picks, you got to hit. That's more the takeaway there. We're talking Pirates. We're talking Paul Skeens. We're talking. We'll be talking about injuries coming up a little bit more too. But first, before we go back to talking a little bit more Pirates, we got a quick note from our friends at Prize Picks. And they are one of our lead sponsors, along with Home Run Forecast. We appreciate them. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country. Prize Picks is really simple to play. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. You just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. You can do this for all sorts of sports. You can do it for baseball, basketball, football, hockey. You can do it for WNBA. That's actually a big growing market right now. You can do all that. We have RotoWire's pick tool that can help you do well. Our pick tool today actually really is taking the less than projection on Jason Tatum and his 42.5 PRA. You can check that out, rotowire.com/picks, when you get a chance. We are here with Travis Sawchick. And Travis, of course, is the senior baseball writer for The Score. And he also has done Big Data Baseball. That was my first exposure. It was when you were a beat writer for the Pirates. And then you wrote the book, Big Data Baseball. And how at one point the Pirates were a leading edge sort of team.
Isn't it funny how I showed up in Pittsburgh my first year in 2013, and they had 20 straight years of losing seasons, which was it's a record in North American pro sports. And they have this great season where brought in Russell Martin and AJ Burnett, Francisco Liriano, Gerrit Cole debuts, and they did do some fundamentally interesting things. Like, they were one of the early widespread shift adopters, where we're going to align our defense this way. They bought in. They signed Russell Martin, who's he had like 210 the year before, primarily for his ability to frame pitches before any other team was really investing into that. And they were rewarded for that. And they, had some development, just pitch change success stories with Liriano. And of course, they had a good homegrown core of McCutcheon, Marte. And sort of like Moneyball, you don't mention. It's all about the new advances. We're not going to mention Mulder, Hudson, and Zito. And, you know, it's funny how McCutcheon and Marte weren't huge focuses of that. But, they did do some innovative things. And what's interesting is, while they embraced some of that PitchFX era research and used it to their benefit, when StatCast comes online in 2015, they sort of missed the boat, I believe, on some of the insights that came from, they were a two-seam sinker philosophy team, and they got behind the curve on, okay, now baseball's an up-in-the-zone spin rate, four-seam, big curveballs off of that. And they sort of, they didn't really join in the launch angle revolution and that sort of thing. So they sort of they captured successfully one era of data in baseball and then missed on the next. And that also a lot of player development advances that clubs like the Astros and the Guardians on the pitching side embraced early, they did not. And you wonder where they would have been when they made that historic commitment in the 9, 10, 11 drafts where they drafted a historic amount of high school pitchers. Had they done that in the modern player development era and embraced that, could they have had more success there? So it is interesting how quick, how nimble you have to be in today's baseball to capture new ideas, invest in the right things, know what is important, what is not. And yeah, you have to be incredibly nimble today too. So I think to lead the Pirates to 3 straight postseason appearances was a great accomplishment, but sustaining success is really difficult, as we've seen.
Absolutely. And then the one time they ever make a go for it trade, it blows up in their face with the Chris Archer trade. It could not have gone worse for them. And you just haven't seen anything since then come close to that there.
Yeah. It was so out of character too.
Yeah.
You almost wonder if there's just pressure from the highest levels to do something, because it was very Neil Huntington was the GM then, and it was very out of character for him to trade so much future value for.
Right.
But, so yeah, that was curious and it didn't go well. I do think Neil deserves credit for what he did in the 13, 14, 15 years, because that hadn't been done there in a long time, and huge financial challenges. And so it was a fun story to capture, a fun time to be in Pittsburgh. And there is a great, if you can put a winner in a field, Pittsburgh is a city that will support.
Absolutely.
And that wild card game in 13 was one of the great baseball atmospheres.
I'm shaking my head because I'm a Reds fan and I vividly remember all that. Johnny Cueto got rattled. You don't see that very often, but
whether he dropped the ball because of being rattled or just unintentional or just a slip up the crowd, that was interesting. So yeah, it was a fun time to be in Pittsburgh.
Absolutely. And we know from Steelers fans that they will get behind you if you're a winner. There's no doubt about that. So absolutely. So and you know what? Baseball's better when Pittsburgh and Cincinnati and teams like that can compete when they're fun. Last year was a great ride for the Reds, and I'm sure you want to see that again with the Pirates at some point in time. Unfortunately, they've had some hiccups this year. Henry Davis, and you mentioned this, just got sent down. We don't know if he's going to be a catcher. We don't know if he's a hitter, and that's really frustrating. I know there's a lot of people are excited about him getting catcher eligibility this year, thinking that we might get a better hitting catcher. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way.
Yeah, I thought he was a good mid-round target in draft season. I assume there'd at least be power there at the catcher position once he had the eligibility, but it hasn't worked out. And, we see a number of young players in their first exposure, like a Jackson Holliday, who struggle. It's a
right.
big leap, and guys have to face it, overcome it to be successful. Maybe Davis will. I think just from a fantasy perspective, I still think he could be an above average power source at a position where we, of course, struggle to get much of any production. From a baseball perspective, I don't know if he's. I just don't like taking do you draft a guy you're not sure is a catcher with such a premium pick? I think it's got to be a Rutschman, a Posey
right.
Type of player who you have no doubt that he can lead your staff back behind the plate. So that was my issue with just from a real baseball perspective.
Well, and just look at their roster right now. Another lesson in drafting catchers in the first round. They got Joey Bart on their team now. And he's had a couple of months, but then you look at it now and he's hitting 195, but he was supposed to be the heir apparent to Buster Posey. Hey, ACC catcher, first round pick. What could possibly go wrong? Oh, well, turns out they're not the same. Who knew? But it's kind of crazy, but it just shows just the risk in drafting catchers, as you alluded to.
Yeah. And there's so many demands on that position that we
right.
don't see. You have your pregame meeting every day with the pitcher and preparing for that and the physical toll of being behind the plate. Although maybe it's a little less now that everybody's on one knee. Maybe the physical toll is just a little bit less. But yeah, there's a lot of intangibles. You have to know the psychology of pitchers. Can you, there's a lot of great public analysis, but can you sequence pitch? Can you call games well? So in addition to the framing, throwing,
Yep.
Oh, and oh, by the way, work on your swing and your swing decisions too.
Yeah. So and we're going to question your every move behind the plate too. And can you frame properly? And you know, you have to carry that burden with you to the plate, I'm sure too. And you know, you're always thinking about all of these things. It doesn't stop there. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people were expecting a breakout season from Cabrian Hayes. He showed some power at the end of the year last year, flashed some power in spring training. He's got one home run right now, and he's hitting 240. He's slugging 318. Is it ever happening for Cabrian Hayes?
Yeah. He's a guy who I don't have him on any rosters this year, but he's a guy I've wanted to buy into in the past because you look at the underlying
right
batted ball metrics, and it's like, oh, he's just one slight adjustment. Raise that launch angle, hit the ball a little out further in front of the plate, and he could be a real difference maker. He's got some speed. You know he's going to be in the lineup every day because of his glove.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he's just he's a confounding player, and I just don't know if he's – I still think there are better days ahead, but I'm losing my I'm losing confidence in, like, projecting that, oh, he's going to be a 275, 25 homer guy with double-digit steals. I just don't
– Right.
I still think it's a possibility and to do that consistently, but he's a better real-life player for now, and – even with third base having some issues, he's a guy the fantasy world could have used, and maybe it'll still happen this year. But fantasy world needs more from Brian Hayes, and really the lineup as a whole, a ton of underperformers up and down.
Exactly. Here's a confounding stat for you: Brian Hayes hasn't even attempted a stolen base this year.
Yeah,
he had 22 years ago, 10 last year. What happened? Why isn't he running? Everybody in baseball is running now. Why isn't he running? I don't get it.
Yeah, and we don't know. Is there a minor injury we don't know that he's dealing with? Who knows? We need good Cabrian Hayes.
And we absolutely need good O'Neill Cruz. And,
oh, boy.
You know, he's not as bad as he was earlier in the season. He is kind of picking it up a little bit, but still 50 Ks, 9 walks, and 144 plate appearances. 35% strikeout rate's not going to get it done, even in an era where strikeouts are really more prevalent.
Yeah, I had some big O'Neill Cruz FOMO after late in draft. He hit 7 spring home runs,
right?
And average exit velocity was like 99 miles an hour in spring training. And I had done a piece for this. Well, it was never published because he was hurt. This happens sometimes where you report a piece, you research it, then the player gets hurt. So I'd done this piece about their efforts to improve his swing decisions last spring and super small sample early last season. But he had dramatically reduced his strikeout rate. And he's one of these guys. He looks like NBA small forward where if he ever his baseball savant page. There's a lot of red on it and skill, throwing speed, bats, barrels, and exit velocity. So if he could ever figure out the swing decision contact part, the big if,
you right.
have a rare, rare player. So, yeah, I personally hope he does because I have him on very expensive fantasy baseball roster.
And he's also, oh, you have him in the main.
I drafted a FOMO main because when I left Vegas, I wasn't very happy with what had happened. So I said, you know what? I spent all winter looking at this. I'm doing another one.
Oh, wow.
And maybe that's...
I didn't know you did a second one.
Yeah. So I said, I'm getting Cruz.
All right.
And so
what round did you get him in?
This is a lesson for everyone. Don't go on tilt.
Don't do FOMO drafts. I actually agree with that. And we've all done it. We've all had FOMO players. We've talked about the concept many times before, but usually these FOMO drafts don't work. There's a reason why you haven't gotten these players. And usually you don't even realize it subconsciously. You're probably right in not getting them because you're not willing to pay that price that someone else is willing to pay. Look at all the trendy guys this year. Wyatt Langford, you know, he has 0 out of the park homers this year, you know, and now he's hurt. Jordan Walker last year, Jordan Walker this year. I mean, it happens. Some, you know, I don't think people had Jordan Walker FOMO this year, but they did last year and it didn't work out. And those are just two examples, but there's plenty others like that. But it's I find that every time I do, like, I'll do like a late online championship and I'll make it my FOMO draft, and it doesn't usually work out the way I want it to.
Yeah, that's it's bad financial advice to do a second FOMO main event. Mm-hmm. And I was so disciplined through my other four NFBC. We can get more into NFBC later, but I was so disciplined and okay, I really wanted Cruz, but because of his spring, he went up draft boards and I'm not doing it. I'm not chasing him. And then right. I finally broke down and did it because yep. It's like, I'm going to hate myself if he goes like 40-25 this year. And I said, So now I just punish. Now I just hate myself for other reasons.
There you go. I do have one LE team. I'll admit to it. That was my second RotoWire online championship. The second beat Jeff Erickson league. I did get LE in the third round in a 12 teamer at pick 30, which I thought was okay. That's at about the top end of my range. Let's do it. Fine. That pick worked out. Now everything else didn't work. It's a Spencer Strider team, so it's already in trouble. But point is, you don't want to be that reachy team for sure. We're going to talk next, though, about another red, Christian Encarnacion Strand, and a discussion his injury led to. But first, quick note from our friends at Home Run Forecast. Can certain weather conditions lead to more home runs? The atmosphere can affect how far a baseball flies by 20%. Home Run Forecast measures the weather conditions at a ballpark to tell us if the atmosphere is good or bad for ball flight during a game. An index value that rates the air is created for each game and ballpark and is displayed on a scale from 1 to 10. Home Run Forecast's premium site offers index values by the hour for each game, 24-hour forecasts, wind direction, and speed, and even whether the roof will be open at certain stadiums. Home Run Forecast is offering a special for the start of the baseball season. You can get access to the premium site for the entire season for only $28, a savings of nearly 30%. Go to homerunforecast.com/rotowire. Now to sign up. Also, we're on the Blue Wire Network, and here are their ads.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
All right, thank you for your patience with that. Jeff Erickson here, and I'm here with Travis Sochik. He is the senior baseball writer for The Score, and you catch his two books, The MVP Machine and Big Data Baseball. Travis, I want to talk about Christian Encarnacion Strand. He went on the IL this week. After like a kind of a day-to-day back and forth dance dealing with his injured wrist. Now we got a good question on Twitter asking about him, and did the Reds mess up by not diagnosing the fracture in his wrist with their initial MRI? And Will Carroll pointed me to an article you and he kind of collaborated together on last summer talking about the whole concept of MRIs.
Yeah, this is where my NFBC world and day job world crossover sometimes. And
okay.
I had I drafted DeGrom and Mason Miller. Well, I drafted DeGrom and I picked up Mason Miller and Fab last year on my main event team. And they initially had some positive, when they went for their MRIs, they had these positive, no structural damage. And he should be back basically quickly. And then, of course, we find out that DeGrom needs Tommy John surgery later on. And then Miller has more discomfort. And it turns out, not that he had a severe elbow injury, but he did have a sprain, which, and a sprain, as Will Carroll will tell you, is a tear.
Right.
Is it small enough that it can heal or be managed without surgery? So I kept wondering. And then Nick Lodolo, one of your Reds, had these diagnoses changes. I'm like, what is going on? Because I'm thinking an MRI, this is a picture, right? This is black and white science. So I called up Will Carroll and I'm like, well, what's going on here? He's like, well, and I was like, I'm sort of like to dig into this as a story because I find all these, the initial diagnoses changes so often, even though I thought we're dealing with, you know, black and white science. And he explains, you know, well, it's not quite like that. And you should go meet someone. And he has a relationship with Timothy Kremchuk, who was the Reds' longtime doctor, and Kremchuk has this great facility in Cincinnati. So I went down there, I interviewed him, I went in an MRI tube for the first time. I talked to Mason Miller and Tristan McKenzie about their experiences. So it's a interesting, for me, it was an eye-opening learning experience, just looking at my own MRIs and speaking with the radiologists there about this isn't black and white science, and we can't tell you the exact percentage of a tear that you might have. And if anyone says that, they're really overstating their knowledge. And Kremchuk explained, that's only, the MRI is only a tool. The physical examination, the player feedback, this all is part of a much more gray process than black and white. So it's really interesting. And just for, actionable fantasy purposes, I think, if anything, you don't want to be optimistic when you hear initially positive. You should withhold some skepticism on any positive initial injury report, because we just don't know. The player starts to respond to getting back on the field and ramping up activity. And, we can't, MRIs as crutches is also, it's just not a great practice. So, it was an interesting.
I was reading your article last night about it, and it was like you went in there, and one of the things that, two things that were noteworthy to me. One, how long it really takes to take an MRI. It's not just like a say cheese, you're done. It's not like an X-ray where it's boom, done. No, you're in there for a long time. And two, you have to remain like absolutely still, which is also got to be a challenge. I've only had one MRI once before, and it does take a long time. And I thought for mine, it might have just been the thing we were checking for, I just didn't realize it's just such a, it's kind of a very deliberate process.
Yeah, I had them put me in as if I had an elbow injury and might be a Tommy John candidate. So put me in like you'd put a pitcher in, and to maintain that position for about 30 minutes, I might have been a little under that, but it becomes uncomfortable. I mean, I fidget all the time, and to just stay still for 30 minutes inside this claustrophobic tube and the rattling of the machine, it was becoming uncomfortable. And I was, that you have a button in your hand that you can, like your panic button, like get me out of here. At a certain point, I was like, I've almost had enough of this. And I had asked them what they put headphones on you and you listen to music. I just asked, okay, what's the most popular playlist? I'll just send that to me. So I'm listening to Taylor Swift songs and I'm counting down. Okay, this is probably 3 minutes. How much more time do I have to go? How many songs have I listened to? So eventually they get me out of there.
Right.
But yeah, it is a difficult experience. And the problem is if you move, you blur the image capturing and you might have to go, you'll get a less precise image. And they said mine was pretty good, like a 8 or 9 out of 10. But yeah, you can if you're an athlete having to go through that multiple times or it's not great. And it's not like I'm undergoing surgery. But it was interesting to go through it and see what all goes into the process. And it all started because of a Mason Miller fab bid.
Yes, there you go.
Out, right?
There you go.
And I talked to like Tristan McKenzie, because he's a pitcher this year who's decided not to have surgery. And he was sort of on the fence of, well, there's enough. The image wasn't really conclusive of whether he needed surgery or not. So he tried to pitch through it. And will that work? For some guys, it does. For some guys, it doesn't. And it's a lot of these cases are fringe and gray areas.
The other thing that struck me from the article was how aware McKenzie was of like looking at his own MRIs and things of that nature. And of course, if that's your whole life, your whole, job, and it's sure you should know your body like that. You should, if it's that, it's your livelihood's based on that. Yeah, it makes sense that he does, but I gotta imagine most athletes wouldn't be that kind of acutely aware of being able to read their own MRIs, I guess, and know what to look for. The other thing too is the other thing you talked about was just how small the ligament is, and just how hard it is to identify, first of all, whether there is a problem, and then the degree, like estimating a percentage tear. I mean, it's like, okay, what's the difference between 12 and 19? Who knows?
Yeah, it's a 7. It's basically a shaped like a cone, and it's like 7 millimeters by 3 at its widest point. And we can understand why these are breaking, given the stresses upon them. And the MRI, it's also, you're basically splicing together a bunch of two-dimensional images and try to create a 3D recreation of the ligament. So
right.
There's even room for error in just how the technology works.
Exactly. I think we're quick to blame medical staff sometimes from afar. I have been. But I think absent like a Cleveland Browns hot tub situation, we need to probably pump our brakes a little bit there.
Yeah, I would say, these generally are, you know, very accomplished, smart people working in team medicine. So
yeah,
it's imperfect technology. And even though it's a great advance and ultimately it saves a lot of careers. Like the Tommy John surgery is really tied to MRIs because it identifies the issue. You repair the player's ligament and then you go in a rehab program. Without MRI, you'd be searching in the dark more often, you wouldn't. So this is still a great scientific breakthrough, to be clear.
Mm-hmm.
My point of the article is just that this is not perfect science, and there's a lot of gray in here. So that's why these, you know, diagnoses change.
Exactly. Taking that back to the Reds, Encarnacion Strand, they did reveal a new fracture in his right wrist. He's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. As opposed to day to day, you know, and back in the lineup and all that. This is yet another injury for the Reds. You know, they had all this remarkable depth, and now all of a sudden they've got 4 starters out of the lineup. They can't score more than, you know, they scored 3 runs. Achievement unlocked yesterday. They still lost 4-3. It's been a really tough watch for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I remember I go on my daily kind of walk as partial exercise, collect thoughts, listen to podcasts, and I remember so many fantasy baseball pods talking about, oh, the Reds playing time, how are we going to handle that? And all these guys, and it turned out not to be a problem, unfortunately. I mean, there's still a ton of, I mean, you still have to love the Reds young core, but yeah, just a lot of unfortunate injuries that they're working through and some underperformance and from key players. And but they'll get going again.
And I saw Trey talking about Paul Skeens earlier. One of the listeners in the chat, Angela, said, I had Skeens for about two hours. Someone offered me Logan Gilbert and Corbin Burns for him.
Oh, wow.
That's insane. Even in a keeper dynasty league, that's insane. Unless there's just like some really, really massive contract considerations. And it's still insane. But yeah, take that trade. Of course you take that trade and then watch it get vetoed. But congratulations there. But that's the whole point. Sometimes people really get in the hype on some of these guys. So I guess if you're in a trade league, go ahead and take advantage of something like that.
Yeah, this is there's some serious FOMO right now. So for an offer like that,
yeah,
I mean, it's tough to turn down.
Yeah. And you know, people do get attached to the elite prospects and you think he's a generational player, but you have a generational pitcher on your staff already in Burns. I mean, it happens there.
Yeah. And the great team context. And it is funny how, you know, we can measure so much, and so much of fantasy baseball is, it's all about quantifying performance and looking at projections and rankings, but then it's also still so psychological.
Yeah.
Skeens FOMO or not being able to resist O'Neill Cruz. That's just, it's not rational, but it's still a very psychological game, which makes it fun. It's a whole nother discipline that is difficult to master.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking about discipline, you have to avoid that, the lack thereof in snake drafts, and especially at a live event like the NFBC main event, which you did for the first time you were live this year. And you were in one of the so-called leagues of deaths. Here's a little word of the wise. Every league is a league of death. Every league has multiple main event winners, I feel like, especially live in Vegas. There's 8 of them live in Vegas, and it can be so overwhelming seeing it there. You see, like, they'll do the roll call of Hall of Famers and main event champions, and every table's got 2 guys like that. It's unfortunately, it's just guys. There are women players. Jenny Butler is one of the best players I know. But unfortunately, there's not too many women that play in the main. I wish we'd get more out there. But it's quite a spectacle. And if you, the first time you do one live, it's tough to maintain your discipline and maintain your cool.
Yeah, it was, first of all, it was a great experience. And if anyone is interested and on the fence and can afford it, I'd recommend playing, because it is to go in that room and draft it live. It is it's a different animal, but it's a lot of fun to be there. And I walking into that giant ballroom, it was a great thrill until I sat down and you're looking at Lindy Hinkleman and Dave Potts across the table from you. And there's so much, the career winnings at my table. I know they're all leagues of death, but it was ridiculous. It was like 2 million career NFC earnings. And
it's insane. Yeah.
So yeah, I would say, and I remember looking when the draft order was set and seeing that 1 and 2 went to Hinkleman and I think Potts. I was like, oh man, I'm just a bad
shape. Do they really need that sort of luck? Yeah.
Yeah.
But of course, if you got Spencer Strider, all of a sudden that's not so lucky.
I know. I took Strider in my OC with a 2 pick, which he wasn't going to in OCs. And that hurt.
Yeah.
That hurt. But yeah, drafting live, there were pockets of the draft where I felt comfortable. Okay, mm-hmm. It's going. But when you have the NFBC employee hover over you and the clock's melting down and there were times, and there's such good players. You know, I would got off track by James Tomine, I believe is how you pronounce his last name.
I'm in a league with him as well.
Yeah,
he, one of the online championship leagues.
He sniped me a few times, and then I'm just sitting there with the clock melting and reaching for. I ended up taking Bryson Stott and JT Realmuto back to back, which I didn't want to do, but I ended up chasing speed and. Yeah, then you're kicking yourself a little bit because you got off your plan or got away from your sheet, but then you don't want to spend too much time in real time second guessing yourself. So I can second guess yourself, Travis, after the draft, not real time. So then you're, it's a whole different dynamic, but a lot of fun and maybe not a great financial investment this year because that team is struggling.
But, yeah. Who's the culprit? Who's letting you down right now?
I started off Judge Matt Olson. Like, oh yeah, I got my power set and great offensive. And I'm going to be boring because in past years, like chasing DeGrom early, like I'm taking, I guess you could argue Judge was an injury risk, but I'm taking proven, I'm not taking Ellie De La Cruz because, oh no, he could tank my batting average.
Right.
So that didn't work out. The pitching on that team actually isn't terrible. And I did value, guys who have proven volume, and I did try to stay away from huge velo guys early just because of the injury association. So, I don't, even though Max Fried has started off a little rough, I did go Webb, Fried, Joe Ryan as like a pitching base, which I felt was still pretty good. And Tanner Houck later was a good selection. And I think
we have Houck in common.
Houck. Okay. And I took some shots later, like Shane Boz. I hope he comes back soon and can provide some upside value late. The hitting has just been ice cold. And like Stott started off terribly. I did have Volpe, who's been pretty good. But then McCormick, the accountant, has been rough and is now hurt.
Yeah.
And I have Ian Happ on that team, and he's been, not very good either. So it's like the only good thing about this team is that it's mostly healthy. So I can't even use injuries as an excuse for how poorly it's performed, but Assuming regression is this natural law, I'm hoping it'll pull some of these hitters back to their career median performances later and ride that wave out a little bit.
You need Matt Olson to be like Matt Olson, first of all.
Yeah. I don't,
he hasn't homered since April 7th.
Yeah. And I mean, his barrel rates and everything have held up okay, but I went out to a dinner with Phil Dussault later after the draft and some other players that night, and he's asking me who I drafted. Like, he's like, oh, I was staying away from Olson this year. I'm like, what? Why? And he talked me through some of the case for it. I'm like, so I sort of left Vegas not feeling great about the team. And I do think drafting live, even though I was prepared and done my research, had my sheets in front of me, there's still points and not having not drafted live in a long time. I got caught up in the energy of the live room, knocked me off a couple spots, which know, I sort of regretted afterwards, but it was a learning experience and still loved having done it. And, you know, watch the tape, get better, be ready next year.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And, you know, it is live. It's crazy. And this year we had, I think it's a record 8 live drafts at once. At least you were at the corner. We weren't right in the middle. So you didn't have like voices all around. But the worst thing is like when you're like keying on one player, you think you really got to have that round and you hear his name mentioned in another draft across the room. You're like, ah, shut up. Be quiet. Don't talk about my player.
I did experience that. Yeah. Especially in those 20 after the second break. I was so keyed in on the voices being called out at other tables, and you don't want to hear your target come up. And that was a dynamic that I hadn't really thought through before entering. Mm-hmm. And maybe I would play like rounds 20, 21 a little differently, like raise some guys up you're really concerned with. But yeah, that was it. That whole dynamic of, and we were the lagging draft. So we were like 2 rounds behind.
Somebody. Oh no.
Yeah. So you are, it is interesting. Like you will forget, at least I will, even though you have this ranking sheet in front of you in a queue, you might like, I'll have a name just kind of, cause I'm so focused on a category or something. I'll just forget about someone.
Right. Right. You get a little bit of a fog. Yeah. It happens. There are certain inflection points in the draft where that definitely happens, especially when, you know, like you said, you got sniped by James a couple of times. If you get sniped or you like you have a list of 6 and 5 of them go right in front of you, all of a sudden the panic sets in a little bit there, and it can be really rough. I was at an end too. I had the 1.1. So like every time I'm conscious, like, okay, if I don't get this closer now, am I going to get another one coming back? Do I do 2 catchers? Do I double up on catchers? I'm glad I didn't. But you know, it was like, what's left for me? You know, you really have to know like the player pool well to know like, okay, you can be confident and calm then someone is going to get to me there. And you know, Ted says, yeah, start reaching after your names get sniped. Yeah. That's what happens is you do start reaching. The problem is when you start reaching, then all of a sudden you forget other players and the chances are when you're at an end, you have to necessarily reach anyhow. When it's a 15 team snake draft and you've got 28 picks until your next pick, naturally you have to reach to get your guys sometimes.
How have you adapted to drafting live in Vegas?
I thought, well, I got lucky. I mean, being on the end is nice in a way, because I had a partner at the draft, my friend Tim Schuler, who you met at the dinner the night before. And he was sitting to my right, so I was kind of insulated. I could interact with anybody as much as I wanted to, but I didn't have to. You know, it was kind of like, I'll choose. I can really stay a little bit more focused. It's hard. It's really hard. I think it really comes down to your prep. You really have to have like, okay, if I don't get this tier of closer, who do I like in the next tier and when do I take it? If I like, you know, which are the 7 outfielders I like in the 20s? You know, you got to go through those players, vet like 400 players, 500 players and say, okay, do you like this guy or not? No. Okay. Move on. It helps to eliminate players, help get rid of some of that clutter. I mean, but I haven't mastered it yet. And that's the funny thing is like snake drafts are often considered less challenging than auctions. And I don't think that's true. It's a different challenge. I think auctions are super fun and challenging too, but I don't think it's checkers versus chess. I think it's chess versus speed chess. It's 2 different types of chess.
Yeah, it's an interesting point about clutter, because even, you know, Phil's of course one of the great players, and he was, I heard him speaking about how he just removes names off his board that are, you know, high ranking players and industry lists, and I think that removes clutter for him. Or yeah, James, sure. James sitting next to me, like a lot of us came with our laptops, or I had 2 screens. I didn't really use a second one, but mm-hmm. we all have our little war room set up, and he was just drafting off of this color coded piece of paper and like crossing names off. I'm like,
that yeah, might but be he put the work in ahead of time. You know, that's the whole point though, is like he put that painstaking work in ahead of time on various screens. So he didn't have to there. So it works. I'm a laptop guy myself, but I know a lot of good players that are pen and paper, and you know, or pencil and paper, as I think Matt Modica is, you know, ruler paper, I think he does. But it's however your brain works. That's the way I always say, you know yourself and just do the prep ahead of time. That's the thing. It's all about being prepared ahead of time. So you're not researching a player when you're coming up, like, do I like this guy? No, you should know that already.
Yeah. I think I had too much clutter going on, and clock speeding up in real time. I think there's something to that. And just looking at my leagues, the live one is by far my worst performer. So maybe it's just random chance, or maybe I have to get a lot better at beating that moment. You think you're prepared. You spend all winter doing this stuff, and then it's like, I just got sniped, and it's pretty. And of course, I only, you talk about battle testing your rankings, and I think that's really important too. And maybe I should do more drafts before a main, because they're like, I did like Mason Miller quite a bit, and I found him going two rounds earlier than I anticipated in some of those rooms. I'm like, huh. So yeah, just, I do think reducing clutter, knowing the guys who you really like, really trusting that instinct part of it, I think is important too. And not just, right, what the aggregate projections might say about a guy. I don't know. It's such a great challenge, though. It's a great intellectual undertaking. And,
indeed, it really is. Last question for you. Big portion of managing your team is doing well in Fab. How have you been doing in Fab? Have you been aggressive? Have you gotten any big fish? Has it worked out?
It's been good. I haven't done anything too. I did get Christian Scott in.
Oh yeah.
In my OC.
Okay.
Like 260, but nothing crazy in the main so far. Like, I think Tommy Pham, I got him in my FOMO main last week for 108, and I think that's my only triple digit bid. I dropped Trevor McGill in both. I got him back and won. Isn't that that's a maddening part about the game? Like, okay.
It's every year.
Abner Uribe. Oh, no. It's Piamps. Okay. So I'm dropping.
Anyway. And McGill got hurt. He fainted he fainted. And he was on the IL. So there was on the concussion. And it's like, okay, I think we can cross him off. And nope, we can't. And I picked up and dropped Kirby Yates in an AL only league. So think about how I feel about how him, you know, just being so awesome. Yeah. Good job, Jeff.
Yeah, I've tried to be more conservative, and I think if you go back and like Rob DiPietro does a great exercise on his pod now, where they kind of go back and look at last year's at the same week last year's Fab results and who stuck, who are good investments and who are not, and you go back and you look at the history even just a year ago, and most of the big I shouldn't say most, because there was an unusual amount of like good rookies coming up last year in the impact pitchers. But so many of these guys don't stick on your team. So it really doesn't make a ton of sense to be doing double digit percentage bids on a lot of guys. So I've tried to stay away from that, and I'm about average in money spent. And I've had some good ads. Like, I think I like the Willier Abreu ad, I have on my other main, and I got Kyle Manzardo early. I hope that works out. His first couple games are rough, but
yeah,
I think it's, we'll see. But so far I haven't done any. I once spent $400 on Julian Merriweather, so I'm not doing that again. Remember when he came up, was it 2 years ago?
I do, vividly.
Lights out series against the Yankees, and I needed a closer. I'm like, man. And of course, so don't do that, kids.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. All right. You have to go to Toronto, and you're going to meet up with the good folks from The Score. So we'll get you on your flight. Travis, thank you so much for joining us. Fun conversation. Really enjoyed absolutely. It. Folks, everybody, thanks for joining in the forum there. Appreciate your talk there. Tomorrow we got two star starters with Todd Zoll and Clay Link. Thanks to Prize Picks. Thanks to Home Run Forecast. Thanks everybody for listening. Take care.